Happy New Year and welcome to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmish. When we celebrated 2020, who could have envisioned what the next 12 months would look like? You don't need me to recap the pandemic that has personally impacted so many Americans. The coronavirus is also altering how we usher in 2021. The iconic Times Square ball drop goes on, but minus the live crowd for the first time in memory. The year that was included an election that is in the record books, but for the wrong reason. So for those reasons, instead of a typical year-ender, I've decided to take a breather with a fun episode. I think we've earned it. Today I'll talk The Simpsons, now in its 32nd season, with longtime writer Michael Price, who would go on to create his own animated series.
Whether you know the face, even if you don't know the name, it's a good chance you know his work. Yes, you do. You have been with The Simpsons for, is it 17 years?
19.
19 years. Yeah, I was going to say, it's a long time, either way.
Yeah.
Also co-created the Netflix animated series, F is for Family. And you've worked quite a bit in Hollywood. Pleased to have you with me today. Michael, thanks.
Hi, Jerry. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So you're in L.A., but you're a Jersey guy, right?
I am from South Plainfield, New Jersey, which is right near New Brunswick, Edison, Metuchen, Piscataway is our my next town over. Yeah, I love it there. I know you guys are, you're about to hit with a giant snowstorm apparently today. So
As we're recording this, we're going to get hit with a some sort of nor'easter. Some places a foot and a half and more. Do you miss that?
I like the snow. I don't miss like what happens afterwards, you know, digging out and all that and the craziness.
Right.
You know, it's fun to drop in, like back in the days when I could just hop on a flight, you know, and travel somewhere. It was always nice to be back for Christmas and the holidays. And you know, my whole family still lives in New Jersey. My mom and my younger brother still live in this. My mom still lives in the house I grew up in, and my younger brother Bill. Big sports writer Bill Price, you may know him. He used to be the Daily News, the editor of the sports page of the Daily News, but now he works for the NHL.
Wow!
He runs NHL.com. But so he still lives in like about 5 minutes away from where I grew up in South Plainfield, and my other brothers still live in Jersey. So I'd love to go out and visit them when I can. Last time I was out there was like a year ago this time. So it's fun to drop in and parachute in and hey, snow, you know, and then get out, come back to where it's sunny.
And it's nice that you keep those ties to the East Coast, to Jersey, to the Tri-State.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I'm still a giant Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan forever. So, and my son who's in his, he's 23 now. I raised him well, you know, he's a Mets fan, you know, his local team is the Angels because I really don't like the Dodgers. So, you know, if I could say one thing I did well as a father is he's a Mets fan like me. So we tend to go and follow them when we can. And I was actually at the last real Mets game, which was the season ending game last year of 2019, where Dominic Smith did a walk-off home run to beat the Braves, I think. And that was so fun. That was so great. I mean, who knew at the time that was going to be the last
real game. Everything would change. But, do you get to go to Met games in L.A.?
Yeah, I'll go to see them when they come to play the Dodgers, or sometimes if they go down to San Diego to play the Padres, or we'll follow them around. And
They play in Anaheim, right?
Yeah. I don't know the last time they played in Anaheim, with Interleague, but we will. But we'll follow them. We'll go to see them if they play, like in Colorado. We've been to see them play in Colorado. We've been to see them play in San Francisco. We went to Phoenix one time and saw them play the Diamondbacks. And I'll definitely follow them around much as we can.
Did you transfer your football allegiance as well, bi-coastal?
Well, you know, here's the weird thing is that growing up in New Jersey, my dad was a Jets fan. And this is when the Jets were really good with Joe Namath. So the first game I ever went to see was a Jets game at Shea Stadium. I saw a Jets game at Shea Stadium before a Mets game at Shea Stadium with Joe Namath. And this was like 1968 or something, maybe 67. I don't need to tell you that the Jets, you know, have a long history of futility after one Super Bowl win. But But
there have been some jokes people are saying about, some people said about the Mets, but you can make the case about the Jets, the cancel culture, that they want to maybe change the name completely from the Jets because it's been such a black eye for people.
Yeah,
as of course we're writing this, they're 0-12 or 0-13, whatever it is. They're 0 for the season.
Yeah, no, that's bad. My poor dad, he passed away about 12 years ago, but he loved them and, you know, suffered with them and everything. So, but the story is that when I was in fifth grade, there was a kid who was a friend of mine who I looked up to, and he was doodling something. I was like, "What is that?" And he's like, "Oh, this is a cool thing." And it was the LA Rams football helmet. And so I was like, "Oh, that is so cool." And because this one kid liked the Rams, I became a Rams fan. So I was a giant fan in New Jersey of the LA Rams when they had this is going way back, when they had like John Hadle was the quarterback and you know, and like Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen and all that. And I was totally into them. And for many, many years I was, and then I kind of like stopped being a football fan. But then that same, my younger brother, Bill, the sports writer, he became a Rams fan because of me, and he is still a Rams fan because of me, only because this kid named Robert Stickle was drawing a Rams helmet, you know, in fifth grade. And then my other brother, Patrick, who's a great guy too, we were kind of like sibling rivalries, you know, he's a little bit younger than me. And that was when the time when the Rams' biggest rival were the Vikings, like the Fran Tarkenton Vikings. Sure. So just to get on my nerves, I think he became a Vikings fan just to needle me, you know. So he's still a Vikings fan. So he's a Vikings fan who lives in down like by Long Branch, and he's a giant Vikings fan. And it all stems from this kid in fifth grade being a Rams fan. And now here I am with LA, and the Rams are back in LA, and I went to
it sort of year. Comes full circle. Yeah,
and yeah, so finally I'm here.
Well, I am a long suffering Jets fan. And I'm also a longtime fan of The Simpsons. And before we talk about The Simpsons, I want to ask, how did you get started in the business?
Well, boy, you know, it started with as a kid growing up, you know, in the New York area, back when there were just like, there was no cable, you know, so just watching like all those old movies on Channel 5 and Channel 9 and Channel 11, mostly 5 and 11, mostly. Like Channel 5 would have all the old like Marx Brothers movies and W.C. Fields, and Channel 11 had Abbott and Costello and all that stuff. And Sunday just loving morning. All that. yeah, just loving that and watching it all the time and just getting into comedy in that way. And I didn't really know that was a thing that you could do. But after college, I went to college at Montclair State in New Jersey, and then I went to graduate school down south for a little while. I just didn't know what I was going to do with myself, and I kind of fell into doing like improv sketch comedy in it with a group in New York called Gotham City Improv. And that was where I started to learn like, oh, okay. I always thought I was kind of funny and could make funny jokes and everything like that. But then that's where it sort of turned into like, oh, this is how you can turn into an actual thing that you can do, you know? And based on that, I did some work with them, and some people said, oh, you know, you've got this talent. And I hooked up with another person. We became like a writing team, performing team. And we came out here to LA to sort of showcase ourselves around, and we ended up getting some representation and like that. And even after that, it was a couple of years of knocking our heads against the walls. And we ended up splitting up our team, and me just taking every crazy job I could get just to sort of stay alive. And I drove a taxi cab, and I did like telemarketing and everything just to make money. One time I was so poor that I answered an ad like on one of those telephone pole ads with the pull off numbers.
Yeah.
And it was a guy who was getting his final exam for barber college. He needed somebody to be his final project. You know, and I have no hair now, but this is back 25 years ago or so more when I had hair. So I went with this guy. I'd never met him before. He could have killed me for all I know. But we went to this weird place like about 30 miles out of LA with like 100 barber chairs. And it was like the barber college barbershop. And I got a haircut and I got paid $50. And so that was all those crazy jobs before I finally started getting work doing what I do.
Wow. So you were like a haircut guinea pig.
That's right.
Writing for animated shows as opposed to live action, different?
Yeah, it's different in a way. In that, like, you can have characters can do different kinds of things, you know, and especially on a show like The Simpsons, where, you know, there's literally dozens and dozens and dozens of characters. There's the main characters, of course, but aside from them, there's all these characters, which would be a little harder to do if you were a live action show. It'd be hard to have such a giant cast. So that's different, you know, and just the style of comedy is a little bit different, you know, on The Simpsons, and Epstein Family is different from The Simpsons too. But other than that, it's not that different. I don't feel like the only difference is that you can have, like The Simpsons, we've always amazing episodes. We have one, we did one earlier this year where it was set in ancient Rome. That was really funny. And we're doing some other ones like musicals and things like that, where you can have a little more fun and come up with stuff that you normally you wouldn't do maybe in a, like a regular live action kind of sitcom.
Right. I was showing you before, I have on a bookcase here, I the first 10, 11 seasons on DVD. So I was a huge fan. And then when they, I guess there was a certain year and you were already, I guess, working for The Simpsons, that they began to, every 6 months or so, they were putting out the seasons, right?
Yeah, that's right. Just about every year. Yeah, like you said, like 6 months to a year, they put out another season. And they really, they still work hard on those. There's no more, they stopped putting out the DVDs, but I think they may start putting them out again. We still record like commentary tracks on every episode.
So I was going to ask you about that, right?
Yeah, I believe the last season we've done them for is going back to like around season 22 or something like that or whatever. Like we're about 10 years behind. Because
I also have the Simpsons World Book. I have the ultimate episode guide up until season 20.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The big red one. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So the episode, I mean, the commentary tracks, I think we've recorded through, I want to say season 22 or something like that, but they'll keep doing them. Maybe they'll put them on for a while. They're putting them online when the Simpsons was on this FX Simpsons World app, it was called, if you wanted to stream.
Right.
You could get them on there. But now everything's on Disney Plus. I'm not sure if they're going to run the commentary tracks in Disney Plus, or they may eventually still release DVDs.
And they're still on FXX, right? I still see episodes on there. I forget three or four days a week. And then they have special marathons where they run them.
That's correct. So they still run on FXX. They also run them on this channel called Freeform, which used to be called ABC Family, which is part of, like, because now the Simpsons are part of the, we're all a part of the Disney family now, you know, so they're owned by Disney. So I think some reruns are shown on there. And FXX, I guess, is all part of the Disney. It's all, everything's owned by
Disney. Oh, right, Fox Disney, right.
Yeah, right.
Do you watch, you know, the older episodes? Do you like to watch them? I know a lot of people who are acting on their shows, they don't like to see themselves. How do you feel on one generation behind it that way?
I do. I'll revisit them. I mean, we'll certainly revisit them when we're doing these commentary tracks, you know, which I'll end up doing like a few every season. So it's fun. Often those are the ones I haven't seen back for 10 or 12 years, you know, so it's fun to see them again. If it's one I've worked on, it's hard to divorce the actual watching of it from like the experience of what it was like doing it, you know? So if it's an episode that I wrote, let's say, then I will be looking at it and remembering, oh, that was the day we did this. Or, you know, you kind of have a memory of like what it was like being in the room working on that episode, or what it was like directing the actors for it. I'll remember like, oh, a joke we got cut or something like that. Right. So it's more fun for me to maybe to watch some of the older episodes that I wasn't involved in. And that's where I can just sort of just watch it as a fan of the show.
How many episodes have you written for The Simpsons?
I have written by credit, I think, on like 22 or 23 episodes, I believe.
And again, since 2002, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, we all work on everything, you know, so like we have a pretty good sized writing staff. So we all have our hands in, or have something to do with almost every episode that's been. So basically, I started the very first day I started, we were working on what turned out to be episode 300, which was the one where Bart ended up suing Homer for emancipation and ended up living in a loft with all these skateboarders like Tony Hawk and Blink 182 and everything. And so that was episode 300. And so we're up to almost 700, I think now. I forget, but we're in the 660s or 670s, I think, right now. So. Yeah, it's a lot of episodes.
And I don't need to tell you, it's the longest running show. What is it? The longest running show in primetime history?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. I think in terms of years and in terms of episode numbers now, I think.
Do you have, and I'm sure you do, favorite episodes either overall from the show and ones that you were involved in more directly?
Yeah. Well, my favorite episode of all time is probably the called Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie.
Look, Squeegee, it's our new friend, Poochie. What's that name again? I forgot.
The name's Poochie D, and I rock the telly. I'm half Joe Camel and a third Bonzarelli. I'm the kung fu hippie from Gangsta City. I'm a rapping surfer, you the fool, I pity.
Oh, Poochie is one outrageous dude. He's totally in my face.
Wiggity, wiggity, word up. Rock on, party.
When are they going to get to the fireworks factory?
Which is the one with Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie, where Homer became Poochie. And the cartoon dog we added to the Itchy and Scratchy show. That's my favorite one of all. That's the best one ever, I think. I just love, I mean, there's so many good ones, but that's my favorite of all. My favorite one that I've written I think it's a really good episode, but it also has more of a personal connection for me, is one called E Pluribus Wiggum that I wrote for season, I believe that was 18 or 19. Maybe even later than that, but season 20, maybe. Anyway, it was about where they had the presidential primary got moved to Springfield through crazy circumstances, and everyone, the whole media descended on them. And then it turned out that everyone kind of voted for Ralph Wiggum as a protest candidate, and then okay. He ended up winning and everything. But the reason why, I mean, I like that episode a lot, but the reason why it has a personal meaning for me is with my son, who was only around 10 years old at the time, and he's 23 now. He was just getting into the show at the time and understanding it. And we spent a lot of time driving around on weekends because my wife, Monica, is a writer. She writes books. And so she was working on a book at the time. So we would spend like big, big, long Saturdays and Sundays sort of driving around while she did her writing. And we started talking about, I was telling him about the story I was working on, blah, blah, blah. And he started throwing out ideas like just as a kid would, you know, and I thought they were really funny. So some of them wound up in that episode. So it's That's in the first funny. Part of that episode where Homer goes to these fast food restaurants and he discovers there's like a garbage can that you don't have to leave your car to throw the garbage out. It has like a scoop.
A drive-up trash can. This must be how the rich toss out their gold. And as long as I'm cleaning out the family chariot, cups, newspapers, bottles, tricycle, lawn chair, uncashed checks. Dispose of property. Oh, this book is too hard. Now for a victory cigar.
So he's the one who actually said that, because we were doing it. We were going through a Burger King somewhere outside LA, and he goes, Homer would love this because he wouldn't have to leave his car. I'm like, you're right, you know. So that became this whole thing where Homer like used that garbage can for all of his crap, and then it led to him burning down the whole fast food street. But anyway, so that always felt like that's our episode together. And then a year later it got nominated for a Writers Guild Award, and so he came to the Writers Guild Awards with us in his first tuxedo and stuff. We didn't win, but it was a very special night for us, and very special for him too. So that's why that's my favorite episode.
Oh, that's great. So that's really like a real family affair with that. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Do you prefer writing for certain characters?
Boy. Well, I love all the characters. I mean, well, Homer, I think you have to sort of say like stipulate that like Homer is the greatest character of all time. So aside from Homer, I love Krusty. Well, going back to saying how like my childhood growing up, like watching all those old movies and TV shows, and I'm just a huge sponge of old showbiz, and like I have this weird photographic memory of like the names of actors and old, you know, old variety show comedians like Shucky Green or whatever, you know, that like, so Krusty to me is like, that's that.
I'm finished. Oh.
Wait,
what?
You could still work. What if you gave up comedy and transitioned to serious acting?
Impossible. I've never shown genuine emotion in my life. I'm even reading this off a card. Okay, next card. But seriously, I gotta speak from the next card. heart. I can't be a dramatic actor. I have all the depth of a footpath. Next card. Skip that one. Next card.
A lot of funny actors have transitioned to drama. Tom Hanks. Albert Brooks.
I'm not convinced.
Michael Keaton.
I'm in.
Zach Braff.
No, I'm not so sure.
Bryan Cranston.
I'm in. And hopeful.
So whenever we're doing a Krusty episode, and I've worked on a couple of those, I get to sort of regurgitate all. Because it's perfect now because, you know, I'm a little bit older, so his references are really super dated. But it's like talking about Joey Heatherton or whatever, you know.
Right.
Like, she's still contemporary to me, you know. Or like talking about, you know, whatever, like Charlie Weaver or whatever, all that old crazy old stuff. So that's why I love all that Krusty stuff. So yeah, I'd say I have to say Krusty is my number one character, you know, aside from Homer probably.
That's fun. I love that. Yeah, they've had Charlie Weaver when they've done the Springfield Squares, right? Right.
That's right.
And I was thinking when you were talking, the first episode I think I remember watching when it aired was a Krusty and his father, Jackie Mason.
Jackie Mason, right? Yeah.
And he had disowned him, and it was sort of like a jazz singer episode, right? I think it was kind of based on that.
Very much so. Yeah, that's right. That was a pretty early.
I think it was might have been the season. Third or fourth season.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that's right. Right.
That,
yeah, that's
that
really
kind of reeled me in at that point.
Yeah.
And of course, I've gone back and seen everything, you know, a million times since. But
right.
Sure. Yeah, that I love that. Guest stars. Favorite guest stars.
Wow. Well, my favorite of all was for an episode that I got to write, which was it was Stephen Sondheim. So. There was an episode I was working on, and it just so happened that I was working on at the time, and I went to a dinner party where we met a guy who Stephen Sondheim, and so I was like, "Oh my God, you know Stephen Sondheim?" I was like, "Yeah," and so I was like, "Oh my God, I love him. He's the greatest. You know, you think he'd ever want to be on The Simpsons?" He's like, "He might. You know, you never know." So then he gave me Stephen Sondheim's address in New York. You know, so he goes, "Write him a letter." Like an actual physical letter, you know, and ask him to do it, and he might do it. So I did that. So I wrote a letter, and then I waited a while, and a couple of weeks later, this letter came in the mail. It was like a little card, and it was typewritten on a typewriter, and it was from Stephen Sondheim saying, "Yes, I'll do it." So then I wrote him into the show, and then I got to go to New York and fly in there and meet him at this recording studio where he not only did his dialogue part, but we had a thing where he had to play a little song on the piano. So we sat down and played at the piano, and I got to direct him. And yeah, I'm sure I embarrassed him. He's a very, he apparently is a very shy guy, you know. So I was sort of like, "Oh, so nice to meet you. So nice to meet you." And he was like, "Yeah, okay, like that." You know, he was like, he pretty much had his eyes closed. He was like, "Okay."
Are there any celebrities that you wanted that declined? Can you say? And are there any on the wish list?
Well, I think the one that we all wish we could get is Bruce Springsteen, and I don't know why he's never done it. We're all big fans of his, and I don't know. I was never been there when we've said like, "Let's ask him to do it," and he said no. I think previously, before my coming on, there were a couple of times where, especially Mike Scully, who was the showrunner back in. Seasons like 9, 10, 11. He's a massive, massive Bruce Springsteen fan. And I know, I don't know why, he just, whatever reason, very nicely said he didn't want to do it. So I think that would be one of our big ones, our big gets.
I guess the pandemic doesn't really hamper an animated show production, right?
No, thankfully for us, we were able to sort of pick right up. I mean, we were in our offices working all the way until the beginning of March. And then when, you know, everything around the same time that everything else went crazy, when the NBA canceled their season, and we were all like, okay, this is real now. And so that's, we all learned what Zoom was, and, you know,
right.
Now
me
it's
too.
Like,
yeah.
Now everybody knows, you know? And so we're luckily, I mean, the process of writing a show, any show is mostly just, when we're there, when we actually get to be there, we're just sitting around a table just talking to each other. So that's a process that was easily replicated on Zoom, where we just have a Zoom conference. There was a lot of sort of getting used to how to make it work and how not to talk over each other and all that stuff, you know. But once we got that figured out, then it's worked fairly easily. The part that was we didn't know was going to work was the recording sessions, and I believe what they did was they, because the studio was closed down, they mailed out these kits to all the actors. Some of the actors, like Yardley Smith, has a podcast, so she has like a really good kind of podcasting studio already in her house. And some of the other actors are like professional voice actors who have a setup already in their home. But some of the other ones didn't. So they would mail them like a beautiful microphone in this weird kind of cardboard box kind of setup with like acoustical foam, you know, and right. making it a little studio. And then they just hook it up to their computer and Zoom it, and they're able to record it. And we've done the entire, almost an entire season that way. And wow. the sound quality is pretty good. And then the animators are able to work from home on their computers as well. So
the show has in recent years has hit some controversy. I'm thinking of Apu in the last couple of years, right? I mean, that, it started with there was a documentary, and that sort of put the spotlight on it. And I guess the end result is, I guess it's the larger PC cancel culture. Hank Azaria is no longer voicing for Apu, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a thing that's taken place throughout the whole industry as well. I mean, the Apu thing, I think, sort of maybe was the spotlight that started a lot of that stuff going. A lot of these decisions were made above my level too, but I mean, there was a feeling of like, it was time to, he agreed and everyone agreed it was time to sort of move on in that way. And that's since taken place across other characters on our show. Like Hank no longer voices some of the African-American characters that he was doing, like Carl and Lou, the cop and things like that. So they hired a really great actor named Alex Desert, who plays, Carl now, and like some other shows on Big Mouth, and I think on Bob's Burgers, I believe it is Bob's Burgers. Another show, I'm sorry, there's another show from the Bob's Burgers people called Central Park, where they
right. Also on Cleveland, the voice of Cleveland on Family
right,
Guy.
Cleveland, right? Exactly.
They
right.
changed
that's
that
right,
as well.
So I mean, I think that's right. I think that's appropriate to do. I think that was, you know, I have no fault against that. You know, we're
Dr.
still trying
Hibbert
to figure
also,
out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, Dr. Hibbert. Yes, that's right, Dr. Hibbert. I'll say this too. I haven't been working on The Simpsons for the last couple of months because I've been up working on FS for Family, the new season of FS for Family. So there may be things going on right now at The Simpsons behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. But I think that they're, you know, we're trying to find the right, everyone's trying to find the right way to keep the character going in a way that makes everybody happy.
Right. And you mentioned F is for Family. I want to ask you about that. You co-created that show for Netflix in 2015. How did that all come about?
Well, that came about because it started with Bill, of course, Bill Burr, the great, amazing Bill Burr, who had a meeting and they were trying to find something to do with Bill. And Bill had mentioned that he had these stories from his childhood growing up in the 70s that he would tell on stage. And he noticed over the course of time, like when he told these stories like 15 years ago about getting bullied or whatever, he would get big laughs. And then, you know, more recently he would tell those stories and people would groan and feel sad for him. And he was like, no, it's funny, you know, whatever like that. But he noticed that like he wanted to sort of talk about that time. And he thought maybe a good way to do that would be through animation, because when you do something animated, it has less of a real impact, you know, like when Homer chokes Bart, right? I mean, on The Simpsons, that's funny. You know, if that was a live action show, you know, it would be gone. You know, you couldn't do that. So he thought using animation might be a fun way to do that. And Bill originally thought about doing just really tiny little tiny shorts for his website. But then when he mentioned that to Vince and Peter, they said, well, what if we expanded it and made it into a full-on series, because we're interested in getting involved in the animated series. And he said yes. So then they needed someone to work with Bill to help develop the show, and they were looking for someone who had experience working in animation and working in TV writing. So that's where I came in. And I had a meeting, this is going back several years now, I had a meeting with them where just met Bill for the first time, and I knew his work from stand-up, and And we just kind of hit it off and told similar stories. You know, I'm from Jersey, he's from Massachusetts, but, you know, I'm a little bit older than him. But we had a very similar kind of frame of reference, like Irish Catholic and working class family. And so a lot of my stories made him laugh, and his stories made me laugh. And so we decided, like, he decided that I was a good guy to partner up on to develop the show.
That's great. And so you're actively, you still work on that show, right?
Yes, right now. I mean, we're writing our fifth and final season. So we're in the process now of putting that together. The episodes are starting to come together animation wise. And in fact, just an hour ago, I was doing some recordings with one of the actors on Zoom. And it looks like we're planning for that last season to be out on Netflix around this time next year, like give or take between Thanksgiving and Christmas, like hopefully around Thanksgiving of next year. That's when we'll be out.
I think that's the, you have the poster right behind you, right?
That's the poster, yes, for season three. That's exactly right. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be appropriate because the fifth season takes place around the holidays. Takes place around. We include Thanksgiving. We have a Christmas episode in it, so it'll be perfect to come out around that time next year.
Netflix has several animated choices.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix has been an amazing place to work. They've been incredibly supportive, and I don't think our show could exist almost anywhere else. It could probably be on like HBO or something like that.
I just want to go back to, can I ask you one more question about The Simpsons?
Sure.
The movie, The Simpsons movie, several years ago, big hit. Mm-hmm. But it took many years before it was put out there. I mean, the show was a big success. I don't remember the year. Maybe it was the 16th, 17th season. I don't have the number in my head.
The movie came out in 2007. Right. So that would have been around season 16 or 17.
Yeah. Right? Wow. It's like I got it right. Why did it take so long? And do you think there would be another movie?
Well, my only knowledge of why it took so long was that, first of all, like whenever you try to do anything, get anything started, even though based on an existing show, time is taken to make deals and blah, 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 and they had to get the actress to agree to be in the movie and then the people who wrote it and all that stuff. So that took a while. But then once it started working on it, I believe, it was shepherded by our overall executive producer, Jim Brooks, James L. Brooks, you know, who not only created Mary Tyler Moore Show and Taxi, but also, you know, directed Terms of Endearment and Broadcast News and, you know, one of the great movie makers of all time. So he has a very particular process and, you know, so we very, very labor intensive on the script. So it took a while and to come up with an idea that they liked, a story they liked, and to work on the script. And so that's more or less why, you know, they really wanted to make sure it was right before they went into production on it and put it out. So once they finally like signed all the contracts, I think it was like 2.5 years or something before it came out. As far as another one is concerned, I'm sure they'd love to make another one. There's been talks here and there about it. You know, I think they've never quite figured out, again, to be the second one of a thing like this that was so successful. I think the feeling is like it really have to be something special, something great. I have no doubt that at some point in the future there'll be another movie. I just don't know when and what it'll be about. But I hope if you do it, I get a chance to be involved in it in some small way.
Yeah,
like I was involved in the first one a very tiny small way, which was fun. Is that me and three other guys. John Frink, Tim Long, and Joel Cohen. We got to work in like what was called like a satellite room where the main room of writers were working on like the really hard issues of like what's the story about and what's going on. And they would call us up and they'd say like, we need this kind of joke. So we were called the joke room. So we just came up with like 30. The one thing I remember was there was a part where Homer was stopped by the police while he was driving, and they asked for his driver's license. And so there was a bit where he like went through his wallet and you found there were all these like silly things in his wallet.
Right.
So it was like, what are the silly things in Homer's wallet? So we just got to pitch on that kind of stuff, you know? So that was fun. And we did a little bit of work on the Albert Brooks character got changed a little bit in the course of, he started as one kind of guy and then he got changed to a different kind of guy. So they had us work on some of the stuff that his character said.
How long can The Simpsons go?
Well, I mean, I think it could go on pretty much as long as forever, you know. I mean, the great thing about just the way the show is constructed is that the characters never get old. They never change. They never age. You know, certainly no end in sight.
There's no end in sight.
Right now that I've heard of. I mean, it might go to a different place, but I think it could just keep going on as long as everybody is happy with it and wants to keep doing it.
You're there for a number of years. Is there ever a situation, either within the time you were there or even from before, where you feel like you're doing some of the same storylines?
Well, I mean, it's a funny thing they say, like, well, when you've done 700 episodes, you're bound to repeat yourself at least once. But we try not to. There's certain elements that might feel familiar, but we're always trying to find some new way, some new thing. We really try not to do the same kind of joke or the same joke again, you know, and a lot of us have a very, like I said, mentioned earlier, I have a very good memory of things. So I have a good memory of a lot of the stuff that I've been through. And Al Jean, who's one of our two, you know, showrunners, has been there since the day one, more or less. And he has a very, very good memory of things too. So we try not to repeat stuff. Of course, now we have the internet to look up everything, but you know, there's certain things that are gonna feel familiar, but we really try our best not to do that. We want to find new ways, new things, new combinations, new stories to tell.
Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to tell me some of these stories.
Sure. Thank you.
No, it's been fun. Mike Price, can I call you Mike? I think I know you long enough.
Sure, yes, absolutely. Yes, definitely.
Mike Price, a longtime writer for The Simpsons. Thanks again.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Mike Price is also co-creator and executive producer of the Bill Burr animated vehicle F is for Family on Netflix. Mike won 3 Emmys for his work on The Simpsons, which began on the Tracy Ullman Show April 19th. I know that date because it's my birthday, 1987, which returns after New Year's with episode 695. And later this season, the longest-running show in primetime history hits another milestone, number 700. Watch The Simpsons Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Fox. If you have any questions or comments about this or other episodes, you can find me on Twitter at Jerry Barmash. Email me, hearnowthenewsjb@gmail.com, and check out my Facebook Hear Now The News page. Joining my Patreon page will put premium content from past episodes at your fingertips while helping boost the podcast's growth. I want to take a moment to thank Carol Miller, the legendary New York City Air personality, for mentioning the podcast on her WAXQ evening show recently. The famed classic rock jock promoted the episode marking the 40 years since John Lennon's assassination. Next time, I'll talk to Bishop Wayne Jackson of the Impact Network. He has plenty to say as a leading voice for African Americans dealing with COVID, getting the word out for the vaccine safety, and what to expect from the Biden administration. If you like what you hear, I hope you'll share this episode with a friend. Have a happy and healthy 2021. Thanks for listening to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barnett.